Fellow writers, we are so happy to be sponsored by Author Accelerator, where you can train to become a book coach or be matched with a coach who can help you reach your writing goals. This is KJ, and I started this certification program this summer when I realized I missed my editorial work, but wanted to learn how to apply those skills to writers working on novels, not articles and essays. This program is absolutely everything you need to get started from the editorial, coaching, and business perspectives. It's also entertaining and inspirational and makes me want to leap in right away. Learn more at bookcoaches.com.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone. I don't remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause. I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now one, two, three.
Okay.
KJ Dell'Antonia, and this is Hashtag In Writing, the podcast about writing all the things, short fiction, long fiction, short nonfiction, long pieces. I have really just gone off the rails with this, but y'all know that we are the podcast about sitting down and getting your work done.
I'm Jess Leahy. I'm the author of The Gift of Failure and The Addiction Inoculation, and you can find my writing at The Atlantic, The New York Times, The Washington Post.
I'm Serena Bowen, a 20-time USA Today bestselling author of contemporary romance, and my recent one is called Boyfriend.
And I am KJ Dell'Antonia, the New York Times bestselling author of The Chicken Sisters, with another book coming out in summer of 2022 called In Her Boots, working on a third, and I am also the former editor and lead writer of The Motherlode at the New York Times, where I used to be a regular contributor, but really I'm gonna let that go. That's my year in review decision, because that's what we're doing today. It is 2021 in the rearview mirror time.
I love doing these. They make me not only feel happy, because I love reviewing this stuff with you guys, and I love getting your take on what was worth it and what wasn't worth it and all that sort of stuff, but I also, it's such a great way to feel good about how the year is coming to a close, because we got stuff done.
We did.
Yeah. Who's going to go first, though? That's the big question.
I feel like Serena is rare.
Yeah,
like,
she,
I can feel
she
sort of
feels
chomping,
ready.
Chomping
okay.
energy
well,
from
yeah.
over there.
I'm happy to do it. And just because I definitely don't want this episode to be just focused on what I did this year, I wanted to kick it off with some things that happened in publishing in 2021.
Oh, great.
And I picked out three sales of companies that sort of said something to me about what was going on in the world. And one of them is that this little company I've done some business with called Find Away Voices, they help authors and publishers produce audiobooks. And they were just acquired by Spotify late in 2021. And what that means to me, I think, is that Spotify cares about the audiobook business and is maybe poised for some disruption, which could honestly prove to be not that wonderful. But that's okay. Let's just see what develops. But it also tells me that audiobook growth, which has been, you know, if you look at book publishing and actually all kinds of media for people who write things, and you say, is it a growth industry? It hasn't been since the turn of the century or whatever. But people always say, well, audio is a growth industry, and they are right. So then also Penguin Random House is trying to acquire Simon & Schuster, and the Justice Department doesn't like it.
Trying.
Right. And of course, I am not well versed in whether or not they had to do anything special to when the Random House Penguin merger went through a few years ago. But so this is actually a smaller merger in terms of dollars and cents. But let's just see what happens there, because, you know, it is kind of a bummer if you want to go out with a big book proposal and it happens to be something that is applicable to Simon & Schuster, then that would take acquiring editors out of the market. So yeah, we'll have to see what happens with that. And then finally, a Danish company called Storytel acquired audiobooks.com. And audiobooks.com is to put it kindly, a niche player, like a super small vendor. They actually are a pretty good deal if you're a busy audiobook listener who often pays full price for things. Their credit program is a little more generous than Audible's. But so Storytel is a big international company that is both a platform that sort of like Audible, where you in another country might have Storytel on your phone and you might use it like a library. You can pay a subscription, and it's more of a subscription model even than Audible is. For example, one of my audiobooks was acquired by Storytel in Portuguese for the Brazilian market. They have their fingers in a lot of places. So that's just another audio is still hot, newsworthy thinger. And so I thought all those three developments were really interesting to me personally.
There's one other interesting way that also audio has become even more popular this year is a whole bunch of podcasts are turning into these like live, people are starting to create podcasts that are like live action dramatized fiction things. So it's almost like we went off in the direction of the podcast as this fantastic nonfiction resource. And now the podcasts are turning the corner back over into fiction and doing these like limited series stories with really great actors. It's really getting interesting out there in terms of what's available for listening.
It sure is. And monetization is always going to come up as a discussion with podcasting. So
as long as we're starting off with like sort of things we've noticed this year and things that are evolving, I had a few too. So
go for it.
Mine are sort of a little more in terms of personal observations. So they come filtered through my particular perspective. But we have all watched with great enthusiasm this year and in the past few years as the lack of opportunity for writers who don't fit a mainstream profile or don't write a mainstream story is evolving in great ways. And that has been going on for a long time, super slow in coming. But the way that I have noticed it, particularly this year, is more books by authors of different perspectives, be it, you know, BIPOC authors or queer authors or authors who wouldn't choose the word queer, or, you know, just there are all kinds of variations on who people see themselves as they write. And a lot of the time, the books that they create don't follow a super traditional, you know, like they don't follow the hero's arc, for example. So a reader who's used to that can be really sort of surprised and distraught. And in the past, I think books like that, and I'm in particular thinking of The Other Black Girl. So that was a really interesting book. And the first two thirds of it is a very classic hero's journey. And then all of a sudden it just takes this wild leap that I, as a reader, found really difficult. But as I have watched other people read it and read the reasons that some people saw it as one of the best books of the year, I have realized that that wild leap is a reflection of a different perspective that isn't mine. And it's actually really cool that is able to be out there and popular. And there's other stuff that's fitting that bill. And as a reader, I'm starting to enjoy it more and more and be sort of less demanding that things fit what I'm looking, you know, what I'm used to. So I'm enjoying that. And I think it's great. So that's one thing that I've noticed. A couple of other things that are sort of more businessy is that I am noticing more and more both editors and agents outright leaving New York. That's been going on. It's not just COVID. It's not just pandemic. It's been going on for a long time. But that sort of, I mean, we really are seeing the end of you have to be in the office, or at least we're seeing a blip in it. I mean, who knows how that's going to fall, you know, how that's going to play out. But as you're looking at agents and editors, you know, a feeling that somebody has to be in a major city, I think we should just totally release that. And then the other thing that I'm finding interesting is all the people that I know and read who are doing originals for various places. So Amazon Original or Kobo Original, which is the thing I only heard about today, or Audible Original. So that seems, that's a trend I'm sort of, I shall watch the progress of this trend with interest. I don't know what to make of it at this point, other than, you know, there's a thing that's happening that we can keep an eye on.
I think that also goes along with the podcast story that I was telling, which is, you know, places like Wondery, for example, now have a subscription service. They're creating, they've put out a whole bunch of new podcasts this year that are really interesting. They let you have the first couple for free. And then if you want to find out what happens, you got to subscribe. And I did, because their content is so good. And so the stakes are really going up in terms of production value of whether it's dramatized or whether it's sort of a story that plays out. Like, for example, The Shrink Next Door is currently, I think I want to say, on Apple, although don't hold me to that. And that came out of that came from a podcast that came out earlier this year. And the production value of the podcast themselves has just gone through the roof. And it's been really fun to watch. And it's also been so cool to see stories being told that you wouldn't find in other places. There's just such a selection now. And, you know, the joke, everybody's got a podcast, is true. But it's also been really, really cool because you can find voices that have not had the opportunity to be in the mainstream before.
You know, backing up a second to KJ pointing out all of those originals deals that are happening, it's kind of the same thing, Jess. The monetization of content has become more interesting all of a sudden. Right. And my inbox in all of 2021 was full of reading apps asking me to license my content to them. And by reading apps, I mean non-traditional, like not purchasing my ebooks, but like, okay, there's the one that's been in the market the longest is called Radish, R-A-D-I-S-H, like the vegetable. And you buy fiction by the chapter on there. Like you buy coins. It's a microtransaction platform. And you buy the chapters. If you like the book, you buy them one at a time or the whole thing. And suddenly there's a million of these apps and they're all hungry for content. So the price of content is changing a little bit. And when somebody does an originals deal with Audible or Kobo or an audiobook company, sometimes that can be a really good paycheck for an author because they're essentially just making something completely exclusive to one platform for a little while,
right,
which helps that platform right drive attention.
Well, it's the same thing that's been happening for ages in TV, and I think is becoming super frustrating.
Yeah.
and I don't know how this is going to play out because, you know, somebody will say, well, you should watch Ted Lasso. And you're like, well, I only have Netflix. I don't have Apple. Or you should watch Only Murders in the Building. Well, I don't have Hulu. I have Netflix and Apple. And it's just, you know, the need to sort of pay for all the individual things. It feels very strange to those of us, at least, who grew up with TV being, you know, free with the price of paying a lot, watching a lot of silly ads. And also, I guess you don't have to watch the ads anymore.
No,
so there is that.
That's the other level, too, is, you know, there's like, do you want to purchase this with ads or without ads? You know, there's that whole other level, mm-hmm, too. And we just, in fact, it was interesting. I just got an email. We had purchased YouTube TV specifically for sports content because we didn't want my older son to, he wanted to be able to watch games and I don't want him to pirate. So we paid for the content. And now ESPN and YouTube TV are having a disagreement and ESPN is pulling their content from YouTube TV. So now I have no use for YouTube TV.
This is like the days of cable. This is how it used, except that you have alternatives, which you didn't
right
in the cable.
Right. And so, and it's now, you know, the one reason we had that one platform was for sports. And now that that's not at issue, we're going to get rid of this. So it's been interesting. But the thing that I was going to add is, you know, the rise, obviously, of Substack and Review, which is what I'm using now because I can have my subscription thing up on my Twitter bio. There's all this content. For example, we had Liz Lenz on the show and she was talking about the fact that it's so nice to have loyal readers as subscribers because that's often the difference for her between paying rent and not paying rent. And you know, as someone who, you know, has always had a blog or whatever somewhere, the idea that you can say, okay, well, now I'm going to ask people to pay for that content. A lot of people have started doing that this year. And what's cool now is that Substack and places like Review are saying, well, let's offer featured content, voices that we find, you know, are really either emerging or important or saying something that no one else is saying. And they have the ability to launch new writers, which is cool too. There's all sorts of avenues in now, which I'm just loving. It's really cool.
Feel free to, you know, support us on Substack.
Yeah,
Actually, that is a thing. Yes. I mean, that is on my list for next year. So maybe it's next episode.
Yeah.
Things about podcasts. But yeah, you can still support us on Substack.
Yeah. Before we go to our personal year in review stuff, can I add one last thing that's sort of personal, but also, so one last thing that I would like to add is there are two things happened for the hashtag AmWriting podcast this year that were really, really exciting. So the hashtag AmWriting podcast has been nominated 4 times for the Mom 2.0 Iris Awards, and we finally won this year, which means we're going to get these beautiful statuettes that are really lovely. And for us, it was a big deal because, you know, these are people that we know and respect and love. And so it was great for those people especially to be saying, we really respect what you're doing. And then the other thing is that the hashtag AmWriting podcast was on Book Riot's list of the top 10 podcasts for writers and writer wannabes. And that was huge for us because Book Riot, oh my gosh, we love, love, love Book Riot. So a little shout out for us. And, you know, we're in our 5th year now, and this has been, you know, I don't know. We just sort of said we'd do this as long as it's been fun. And I'm just pleased that it's still fun and that we still have people who enjoy listening to our work and to our words about writing. So thank you to everyone who's been listening, and thank you to everyone who, gave us special accolades this year. All right, do we want to move to our personal stuff?
Sure.
Serena, you want to start with your stuff?
Sure, and I think I'll be quick. This was my highest grossing year in terms of...
Woohoo!
Yeah, and I'm really excited about that. It's a little bit artificial just because of the dates that books came out. I kind of got paid for 5 books, but I only published 4. But honestly... it hurt me.
What do you mean?
Well, just that I felt really a lot of burnout this year. And so that came at a cost. You know, I proved that I could summit this mountain financially, but I didn't always have fun, you know, when I was leaning into it in 2020 and also this year. So
Can I point out that when you say that you're, you know, you had a really good year financially, the way that your books work is slightly different from, like, I don't know, someone who writes standalone books as saying, I had a really good year. That would probably mean that they had like one big standout that was a bestseller that year. Whereas for you, because you're building these universes, you get new readers, but then you also have your backlist and you're working so hard, not just to get the new book out, but to keep the backlist moving as well. And that, watching you do that has been such a learning opportunity for me. I love watching you do that. So with you, it's a little bit more complicated than saying that I had a good year because X book did well. It's a much more complicated picture than that.
Yeah. I mean, in some ways, it's simpler for me to keep the revenue train growing because I do have that big fat backlist, but it requires active, you know, care. It's kind of like owning a dog. You have to keep taking it outside all the time, or, you know, or it is not going to do what you want. So, I have to work hard at that. And actually managing the backlist can really eat your week. Like if you're struggling to write, you could just work on that instead. And it's kind of a problem. But the truth is that I also learned a lesson this year about what I was capable of doing without misery. And so I hired some more help later in the year. I got more help from Natasha, who had been working with me for a while now, for more than 1 year. And I looked at what I wanted to do and what I wanted my days to look like. And I said, I think I need more help from her. And I asked her to step up for me more hours. And, And that's going great. So, you know, it's like, it's lovely to say, oh, I had a big year, but it's also, it's really lovely to say, I found my limits and I'm doing something about it. So, anyway, when I look at that big year, it's because I did, I've had four titles published, and Front List still matters, you know, the most to my revenue, honestly. I had, growth in audio, which, you know, is finally became a trend for me personally and not just something I read about in Publishers Weekly. And I also just felt how perilous this job is. And I'm, you know, 90% certain that I can't have an up year next year too. And that's really okay with me. Like, for the first time, I'm really okay with that. You know, if 2022 does not turn into the money year that 2021 was, like, I will neither be surprised nor dismayed. And that's it. That's my year in review.
I want to throw out that you, you know, had that sort of gold star moment when the New York Public Library put Roommate on the list of the 100 best novels for adults this year, which I thought that was, you know, I was talking to someone last night who had just received sort of a major career accolade that was something that I also would love. And we were just saying, you know, so many people would just be like, oh, that's cool. Like, you know, but y'all will get it, that is yep. The New York Public Library's yeah. list, top 100.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's so cool. I've that's gotten so cool. much better. When I looked at to talk about my year in review, I looked at my goals for last year and I met them, and I'm so much better about not having a goal that's so extraneous like that anymore. Like, it meant mm-hmm. a ton to me to end up on both the New York Public Library's top 100 and Amazon's. Like, that was amazing, but I cannot control that stuff. And,
right.
So it was great. It's just, I can't let that sort of factor right. into, you know, it was a really nice day.
That's not goals met.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that actually, it's funny you say that. I was thinking a lot about the year end goals this year because the year end lists this year, because, you know, I was desperately hoping to be on some, and but also never expected to be on any. Partially, it's was an April release. It's a niche book. It's, you know, it's a difficult topic. You know, the addiction inoculation is not something that's going to be like a wide-ranging book. And so, you know, while I hoped it would end up on some lists, I also have to let go of that and say, totally out of my control, not something that's likely to end up on a year-end list. And that's cool. I did end up on some people's year-end lists, some, you know, Bookstagrammers and things like that. And that means a ton to me because those are the readers. But editors pick lists, you know, there were some things that I was able to control at the beginning of this year when the book first came out, but that's not one of them. And so I'm cool with that. And I really, really am cool with that this year.
It was nice not to have to worry about that.
Jess, you also have the benefit of knowing that, like, your book could actually save somebody's life. You know,
yeah, so it's just different. I mean, when I was looking at my year in review, one of the big things that kept coming up over and over again is I put all of those emails, the emails where people say my book helped them realize something about their use or their drinking or their whatever, or, you know, I really feel like I connected with my kid in an amazing way because of something you recommended. And I looked at that folder and I realized, you know, as far as a year in review goes, there's nothing better. You know, there's nothing better than that. And, you know, there's someone who got in touch with me about the book is celebrating 4 months sober in a couple of days. And that's, I can't ask for anything better than that. It's been an incredible year for me. So my goals for last year, you know, I blew some of the deadlines for when I wanted to have, you know, a new book proposal in and stuff like that, but it's all worked out for the best because I'm still refining things. I'm figuring out which book proposal to turn in when, and I actually have two of them now, which is going to be really interesting. I don't know how that's going to shake out, but it'll be really fun to watch, I think. So when I looked at my goals for this year, you know, when we're going to talk about that in a minute, but when I look at my goals for this year, they really do reflect a little bit of some of the successes from last year. And the successes from last year really had to do with sort of organizing my year, figuring out what was really important to me, and giving myself a break when it came to writing articles. And that's been a huge relief. I'm really, really happy. I did everything I could do with the release of The Addiction Inoculation. You know, I got some, you know, really wonderful reviews, and that was, I did everything I could do. And that, when I got to the end of this and this year, that was the thing that I knew I was going to look back and say, you know, is there anything I would have done differently about my book release? And I can honestly say no. I don't think there's anything else I could have done. And for me, that positive, those really good feelings about the release and continuing to get emails from people saying that the book has affected them in various ways. I get to do some really cool things with some public health initiatives. I get to be the face of a public health initiative for a state here in the United States, and that's not been announced yet, so I can't really talk about it, but I couldn't be more proud than that. So I'm really, really happy with how this went. And I was looking at my goals just now, and I think I got them all. I didn't get the dates right, but that's okay. I got them all. So I'm feeling really good.
But what were they?
You know, a proposal to Lori by a certain date. That didn't happen because I kept working on it. Try to sell the book by a certain date, and that didn't happen. But I'm still cool with that because I still have that proposal in hand, and I don't know what's going to happen with that. January, February for all the addiction inoculation excerpts. Well, it didn't happen in January, February, but it happened in time. And so they got done, you know, and give myself a break where journalism concerned. Big fat check. I did that. I wrote the pieces I really, really wanted to say to write this year, and got some offers to write some pieces that I didn't want to write. And I said no. And I felt really good about those decisions too. So yeah, all of those things. My word last year, as I said, was organize. And I meant organize my thoughts, organize my process, organize my time, and organize my priorities. I fell short on that, but that's still a work in progress. So
yeah, I think that would, if you sat here and said, okay, I did that.
Yeah, I'm done.
So this year, I'm going to do a different thing because I'm organized.
Yeah.
We would, there's a button. I can throw you out of this Zoom right now.
Yes, I am all set. I'm perfect now.
And Jess is off the podcast. Poof.
Yeah, I'm still working. I mean, the priorities one is really hard because for me, the thing that I do, you know, I love the writing and that gives me a buzz and it's all great. And you know, none of this happens without the words on the page, but I also love doing the PR. And if I spend all of my time doing the PR because it's a quick payoff, then no words get written. So I always have to balance those priorities. I was working on, and that'll play into my 2022 goals too, when we get around to talking about those.
That's next week.
Yep.
Yeah. So my turn?
Yes.
All right. So I had very few goals for 2021. Like really there are five things written on this list. One was, finish the what is now In Her Boots and had a different title at the time. Check. Did that. It was a little more painful than I expected it to be. and a goal was draft and pitch the book number 3. And that actually got crossed out at my 6-month review as I realized I was still rewriting book number 2, In Her Boots. And it turned into Start New Project. And I am well on my way with that one. So I feel good. I had started a coaching business on my list, and I have indeed. If you go on my website, you can see I do a little bit about book coaching now. I've worked with 4 or 5 people in small ways, and I'm well aware I can only work with like 1 person a month, and it's a pretty limited kind of thing. But it's fun. It gives me sort of colleagues and connection and an opportunity to get into how other people's minds work. I loved being an editor at the Times, but I don't want to seek another editorial position. So I think that this is going to feed that need for me.
And we're also doing them on the podcast too. And that's been super fun. And that's been way more fun than I even anticipated it would be.
Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to doing more of that next year.
Yeah, definitely. If you would like some podcast coaching, you can email us at our email, which I have now finally memorized, which is amwriting@substack.com. And you can email us and maybe be a guest on the podcast. And those have been great episodes.
Yeah.
So I did that. And I wanted to organize our writers group for 2022 in a different way. it's kind of a sort of specific thing that I'm trying to do, pulling together a group of novelists to talk about things that we have in common for the year. And I've actually already, I have started that. So it's not like I was thinking at the time I might try to do a live in-person thing, and that's not looking necessarily, right. But it's actually still possible. And I've started, so I'm pleased with that. And then I had a list of things to do instead of play on my phone. I did okay with that. You know what's so funny is when I open Instagram now and would start scrolling, when I see that little thing that says Instagram by Meta, I'm like, oh, well, I don't like you. And it literally turns me off. For whatever reason, when it said by Facebook, I was like, oh, okay, yeah. And that's another thing that I do.
Yeah.
But the by Meta thing is just so much more like, by me, your corporate overlord of all things that you will see. And it makes me go, ew, yeah, I'm just going to post and get out. So
that's
helping me. All right. And my word was flow. And I don't know if I flowed or not. It was a good word. I drew a picture. My motto, though, was to do one thing at a time. And I think I did that.
I don't know if I flowed or not.
I drew a little picture of a bird. Yeah. I don't know. I don't even remember what I meant, to be honest. So
I felt bad that my word, I was sitting here looking at my word organize and looking around my office. And my office is the messiest it has ever been because I've been doing a lot of speaking engagements. And when I do speaking engagements, I have to arrange my office in a certain way, which means pile of things get shifted from one place to another. So it's a little strange that my word for 2021 was organized. And I'm sitting in just there's just stuff everywhere. It's a mess. It's a horrible
mess.
Well,
I think we choose our words out of necessity. And, you know,
yeah, that's true.
Mine was generous, and I can't tell you if I was more generous this year, but I sure hope so.
You gave a lot of people work this year, and I think I love that about you, that you thought very carefully about, and last year as well, when the pandemic started, you thought very carefully about how to help people have more work and how to help get people get paid. And I think that's just fantastic.
Well, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Is there anything else to say about 2021? We managed to see a decent amount of each other in person.
Yes.
Considering. And I am really pleased about that. That was absolutely, intentional on all of our parts and took it. Somebody on Instagram probably was saying, you know, your closest friends are the ones you see twice a year and forget to email back for 6 months at a time. And it's, you know, sort of that. And it's so true that sometimes the people you most want to spend time with aren't the ones you manage to spend time with. So I'm pleased that we managed to spend time together.
I am too. May I add something really quickly, since it comes up from people in the hashtag MWriting group, which is more questions about speaking. And I will say that when we talked about goals last year, I had talked about the fact that COVID had really tanked speaking engagements, and that is changing. Speaking engagements are coming back. I personally saw my rates go back to normal, even for some virtual events. Yes, there's still some lower stuff that's going on. And, you know, it's been really tough. I've had a couple of things that, because people are so desperate to have it be an in-person event, they've canceled, you know, a couple times, and we've tried to reschedule. And now, goodness knows all the things that got rescheduled for this coming year, we'll see what happens. But I had a really good year this year, whereas the year before, about 70% of my income had gone away. So it's not all the way back to normal, but the nice thing that happened this year is that people figured out that if you invite people virtually, you can have lots and lots of people attend who may not be able to make it to your event in person. It makes them more accessible. And it means that you can do cool things like have prospective parents for a given school watch a speaker that they may not have been able to come to. And, you know, I think people are also realizing that a lot of these places are making the video available after the fact if you have registered to go to the event. So you don't have to actually do it at the time that the person says you have to do it. There have been all kinds of interesting upsides to doing virtual events. And while, you know, I did do some in person, and I will say it was really, really hard. Masks make hearing people difficult. Masks make understanding how to spell people's names difficult. It makes all kinds of things difficult. So having these virtual events and having my speaking career return to almost normal this year was great, and not what I expected. I thought that it was going to be another really terrible year. So for those of you who are looking to do speaking this year, know that people are really starting to understand that if you want to have speakers, it might have to be virtual, and that that's becoming a new normal for lots of fields. So do not fret.
When you say almost normal, do you mean that it took an almost normal amount of your time, or that it provided an almost normal amount of your income? Or
it provided,
because obviously it wasn't normal in that you weren't flying around, you know, it wasn't, we're not back in 2019.
Right.
So, but some things are normal.
When I say almost normal, so when things first went virtual, lots of people said, great, you don't have to travel here. We can pay you less. It's going to be less of your time, which didn't actually make a lot of sense, because if you think about it, they're not having to pay for the travel either. So, and it does take a fair amount of my time, because I do plan individually for each speech. So when people started to realize, well, wait, that's the only way it's going to happen, and my rates are my rates, a lot of people said, oh, we're going to have to bite the bullet and go ahead and plan for a virtual speaking event this year for our speaking series, for our parenting series, or whatever that thing was. And I think it was just people starting to wrap their brain around the fact that it was going to be virtual or not happening at all. And I think that was that really helped, because that's when things started to pick back up. And I will say my income is almost, I'd say, let's see, I figured this out just recently. I think I'm at like 80% of where I thought I would be if there hadn't been a pandemic. So I'm pretty darn happy with that. And I think it's, you know, part of that is because my speaking agent has been really, really good about helping people see what it can be like. And, you know, if someone wants to hire me, they can attend another talk that I've given online and say, oh yeah, we would love her to tailor that for our community and have her come in. And on the downside, I will say part of the reason that my talks on substance abuse and substance use disorder have been more popular is unfortunately because the substance use disorder rates have been going up because of the pandemic. So there's a downside to that as well. But, you know, as far as speaking goes, I think things are moving in the right direction. I'm hoping that this year, even given the some more uncertainty that we're seeing right now with the new variant, I think it's going to be a good year. My fingers are crossed.
I accepted speaking gigs this year that I would not have accepted in person. So it's totally not on the same level and not like a real data point here. Uh-huh. But the only reason I got paid speaker fees this year at all is because it was virtual.
Well, and what was also really nice, though, is I got to see pictures of you when KJ went with you to go, when you went off to sign some books. And it was also really lovely to see you out there with your fans and getting to sign books for people. So I hope we get back to that place, but I'm so pleased that more people got to see Serena this year that would have gotten to see her otherwise. So yay.
Well, thank you.
All right. We actually ran long, I think. So are we good for our year in review? Everyone reviewed everything they wanted to review?
Yeah.
I think we have reviewed our year. We talked about throwing out our favorite piece of writing advice from the year, or our favorite realization from the year. Anybody, do we want to? I've got one. I'm ready.
I have one. You go.
Okay. Mine is silly. But I realized recently that, that I only need one plot. I have a tendency to try to come up with books that have like 17 plots, and I thought that was unique to me, but it was actually in the process also of working with other writers that I've realized that that's a message that other people need to hear too, which is you really only want one plot done strongly, and what you perceive while you read as a lot of stuff going on only works because there's that one solid plot guiding you through. So that's my new motto. You only need one plot.
That's good.
Okay. Mine is that I really have to be the person who writes the flap copy first. So I'm not allowed to write the book until I have written that flap copy.
I like it.
I like it too.
That kind of goes back to last week's butter episode. If y'all have not listened to the episode, I think it's 294, on putting butter in your writing.
Yeah, do it.
Go back and do it. Yeah.
Well, I had one, now I have two very important realizations. One is my office door is closed and I'm realizing that the vitamins I'm giving my dogs make them fart really, really in a disgusting and horrifying way. So I'm going to have to change that. But the big thing was I was really curious, and we talked about this last year, what role COVID was going to play in plots. And since then, a couple of books have come out. We did talk about the book, The Sentence. We talked about Jodi Picoult's new book. And I was worried it was going to be a too soon moment, but I think I'm really excited to see that authors have taken on the pandemic and done things with it, whether it's because it's a plot point and forces a mute cute to happen, or it forces two people into close proximity or isolates people from each other and that creates a story. I think we're at a point now where I'm okay with reading about this pandemic that we're still in, that people are writing about. So it's been cool to watch people actually brave it and the books to, and now that we've had enough time for the books to get, you know, through the publishing mill, they're out there. And I'm really excited to see what authors are going to do with it. I think there's all kinds of cool potential.
Well, if we're going
potential.
There.
Yeah.
But before you get your real piece of advice out there, unless it was the dog vitamins.
No, it's...
I think the thing that's concerning me about the COVID and how it's going to fit into plots is that, you know, the flu epidemic in the last century was this huge, long thing that took up so much space and energy. And there are vast quantities of things that we didn't necessarily, that, you know, as a person living now, I didn't know about it. And that's in part because I literally can think of a book where that was a plot point, and it was a paragraph in a 300-page book. So I'm just sort of, I don't really have any illusions that my books are going to survive 100 years, but I think I'm worried about 5 years. Like, whether people are going to want to read.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, so I'm sort of thinking, well, do we throw masks in as just a thing? Like, you know, she lowered her mask to pay for, she took a sip of coffee, she lowered her mask, or she put on, and I don't know, because we don't hear, like, you know, the children were going to school on the roof of the city in New York when you're reading stories that took place then. Anyway,
But I will point out, as someone who, my children were hate watching a Twilight movie the other day, just for fun, and I realized that the reason that Edward is a vampire is because he died during the 1918 flu thing. So now I'm realizing, well, it's just going to be one of those things that is a useful device, I think, for a while, for going out, you know, from here. So I'm kind of interested to see what it's going to be about. And the reason that I bring that up is that I have realized that my best writing comes from a place of what I'm actually dealing with and what I'm actually immersed in, and that I need to just let myself give myself the freedom to write about those things. And every single time I do, I end up having something that hits. I wrote about a little while ago, I wrote a blog post about going to a concert with my son and facing the fears I had during COVID about my son and mental health. And it was just a little blog post for me, and I'm still getting emails about it. And I'm still getting people saying, you know, wow, that's where my head was too. And thank you so much for voicing it. So more and more, I think it's going to be important for me to sort of write about where my headspace is. And if that's in COVID, that's got to be okay too.
Excellent. Well, that makes total sense. And we're going to put a link to that blog post in show notes.
Oh, good. Yeah, it was called Look at the Sky, and it was a really, it also led to some really fun, an interview came out just the other day that was sort of flowed from that original blog post. So, you know, I love when one idea flows into the next, which flows into the next. It's very satisfying. Okay, we're good?
Yeah.
All right.
We've reviewed that year.
We have reviewed that year. Until next week. It might even be until next year, everyone. I used to love doing that when you go off for the holiday break in school. And it was always very funny to say to everyone, see you next year. So until next
week. Nope.
It's not going to be.
Still next week. Yeah. Okay. Our next episode is going to be the very, until New Year's Eve, people. If you want to listen to us, you know. Yeah.
Until we hear or see you next. Until next week, everyone, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game. The Hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work. Same.